Washington. This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. Russia's ambassador to the United Nations has warned a military conflict could erupt with the United States over Syria. President Trump convened his National Security Council to discuss the American response to the recent alleged chemical weapons attack blamed on the forces of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Mr. Trump has been tweeting a great deal about all of this, and Hoover Institute scholar Richard White speaks with VOA about the Trump tweets.
This could be that the president is trying to keep the Syrian government guessing when the attack will take place and how it will occur. There was some concern, and based on his earlier tweets, that he was telling the Syrians we would use cruise missiles and so on. But this, his latest tweets make it less clear when the U.S. might attack and how it might do so.
Some U.S. lawmakers and world leaders are urging the Trump administration not to attack Syria. President Trump pushing back against a report he is considered firing Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who was heading the criminal investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Mr. Trump is upset that the Federal Bureau of Investigation raided the New York office and residence of President Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen. Also in the news, President Trump has ordered his top economic and trade advisors to look into rejoining the Pacific Rim Trade Pact that he abandoned last year, 3 days after taking power. Mr. Trump has often said he prefers bilateral trade deals instead of multinational pacts, believing the U.S. does not fare well in bigger trade deals. This is VOA News. China's Commerce Ministry says trade negotiations with the United States are impossible as Washington's attempts at dialogue were not sincere. We get more now from Reuters' Ryan Brooks.
We are well prepared and willing to fight back. That was the tough talk on trade from China on Thursday, a warning from Beijing for the U.S. to back off any escalation of its tariff dispute with China. Officials also downplayed the idea that Chinese President Xi Jinping's pledge to cut tariffs this week was a concession to America. U.S. President Donald Trump responded on Twitter saying he was thankful for Xi's kind words on tariffs and access to U.S. automakers, also predicting the U.S. and China, quote, will make great progress together.
That is Reuters' Ryan Brooks reporting. United States has noted the release of a group of Sudanese political prisoners following an order by Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir this week. Dozens of political detainees were released from prison in what has been called an effort to promote reconciliation and peace, weeks after mass arrests were made to suppress anti-government protest. Protesters took to the streets of Lima, Peru, protesting the start of the Americas Summit with heads of state from across the region.
El hombre de la paz se llama Nicolás. Ahí lo puso Chávez.
President Trump had been scheduled to attend, but later canceled his first official trip to Latin America. Many of those protesting in the Peruvian capital said they held an anti-Trump and anti-U.S. placards. Also, some protesters came out in defense of Venezuela, its embattled president, Nicolas Maduro. Caracas is expected to be a major issue as the talks will continue calling for tougher action against Venezuela ahead of elections, which critics have dubbed undemocratic. Amnesty International reporting the number of executions around the world continued to fall last year with a 4% drop and a significant decline in the number of new death sentences. The vast majority of global executions recorded last year took place in China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Pakistan. Five other countries, Botswana, Indonesia, Nigeria, Sudan, and Taiwan, reported no executions. As many people marked World Holocaust Day, once again promising to never forget the genocide that killed 6 million Jews during World War II, a new study shows Americans appear to be doing just that. The study, released by the Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany, found 2/3 of American millennials cannot identify what Auschwitz is. 22% of millennials had no idea, had never heard of the Holocaust. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Everybody, Africa, welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The DRC government will not attend today's pledging conference after accusing humanitarian agencies of inflating refugee numbers.
If there has not been confrontation of data between the government of DRC and humanitarian bodies who are organizing that conference, then the DRC government will not attend.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Sierra Leone's former ruling APC party is challenging the election of President Julius Maada Bio. And divisions within Zimbabwe's main opposition, MDC, continue as one of its vice presidents is recalled from parliament.
I am definitely going to appeal this decision because it is clear that I'm being victimized. I'm being victimized left, right, center. But if they think that they are going to break my spirit, they will never break my spirit.
Tokozani Kupe is one of the three vice presidents of Zimbabwe's opposition MDC party. There are calls for the unconditional release of seven abducted aid workers in South Sudan's Yei River State. And Uganda has finalized plans to manufacture cars within the next 4 years. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The government of the Democratic Republic of Congo says it will not attend today's international pledging conference in Geneva for the humanitarian crisis in the DRC. Instead, Information Minister Lambert Mende has accused humanitarian agencies of exaggerating the number of refugees in the country. The United Nations says about 4.5 million people are displaced internally and another 750,000 have fled the country. The conference hopes to raise $1.7 billion. Mende says DRC government figures show about 232,000 people are displaced. He accused organizations of profiting from humanitarian assistance. Otherwise, Mende said they would have cooperated with the government.
I'm not sure that the government will attend, although I'm not in Kinshasa. But if there has not been confrontation of data between the government of DRC and humanitarian bodies who are organizing that conference, then the DRC government will not attend because we have told our colleagues of these humanitarian bodies that we must confront our data because their data seem to be too exaggerated.
Do you have any question or concern about the number of people who are either displaced internally or have left your country because of the crisis?
We have the numbers of our citizens who fled internally, and we have the number of those who went for seeking refugees abroad, and the number, the figure those humanitarian body gave to the government was not the same. And they did recognize that there have been some exaggeration from them, and there will be a confrontation of data before the conference because we need more investment, we need more development than humanitarian assistance. So if this confrontation has been done, we shall attend the conference. If that confrontation have not been done, if they have denied any confrontation with our authorities, we shall refuse to attend such a conference.
Mr. Minister, although your country needs more development than humanitarian assistance, I'm sure you will agree with me that no meaningful development can take place when you have so much violence going on in different parts of your country, particularly the Kivu and Kasai regions.
Who told you so? You know, we have 149 counties in this country, and we are having security problems only in three counties, partly, not entirely. So argument you are giving is totally false. The country is under control of this government. Only three counties. We have some problems of security. This does not please our colleagues of humanitarian bodies because they have taken profit of this humanitarian assistance, not for the sake of our people, but for their own sake, maybe. because if it was for the sake of these people, they would not be reluctant to cooperate with the government. Congo.
Mr. Minister, as you know, elections have been scheduled for December this year. Recently, your government has said that you did not want international help in terms of funding the election. The question is, are you saying that your government has the funding to hold these elections?
The answer is yes. We have managed to secure the budget of elections. I'm sure that you have heard about the increase of the cost of some minerals we are selling abroad. And due to that positive situation, we have been able to secure that money.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The Movement for Democratic Change, MDC formation, led by Nelson Chamisa, has recalled from Parliament former Deputy Prime Minister and MDCT Vice President Tokozani Kupe, saying she is no longer a member of the MDC opposition. But a furious Kupe says her faction is the authentic MDCT formation and not the Chamisa wing. She has hired an attorney to challenge her recall from Parliament. Kupe tells Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service that her expulsion is null and void.
I am really surprised how Parliament operates and how the law operates. I wrote to the Speaker of Parliament earlier on indicating that the MDC, we had a leadership dispute and that the Speaker of Parliament should not entertain anything from either parties because we are yet to resolve our leadership dispute. After the death of the president, our constitution is very clear that we are supposed to call for an extraordinary Congress where a substantive leader is going to be chosen, of which I have already, as the acting president, called for an extraordinary Congress, which is going to be held on the 21st of April, to choose a substantive leader. And I don't see the reason why Parliament proceeded and did a recall when I had earlier on indicated that we had a leadership dispute. So it means Parliament has decided to choose which MDC they favor. And we have said we are the legitimate MDC, which was formed in 1999, and we remain so.
But, Honorable Kupe, have you been notified formally about this development?
I have not been notified formally. What happened is that I heard about it, and then I called the Clerk of Parliament to find out exactly what happened, because the Clerk of Parliament is in possession of a letter that I wrote to Parliament indicating that there was a leadership dispute. And I was asking him why they proceeded and did a recall when, in fact, I had written to them telling them about the leadership dispute. It is not the job or the role of Parliament to decide on which party to favor. Parliament's role is to make sure that justice prevails. And it is clear that this Parliament has decided not to follow, you know, the rules. They've decided to make sure that they save another side at the expense of another side. So justice is not anything as far as they're concerned. They don't want to treat people in a just and fair manner.
So are you going to appeal this decision?
I am definitely going to appeal this decision. I've already indicated to my lawyers that this should happen because it is clear that I'm being victimized. I'm being victimized left, right, center. But if they think that they're going to break my spirit, they will never break my spirit.
That was Tokozani Kupe, leader of one of the factions of Zimbabwe's opposition MDCT party. She was speaking from Bulawayo with Blessing Zulu of the Zimbabwe service. Meanwhile, acting spokesperson Tabita Kumalo of the MDC formation led by Nelson Chamisa says Kupe's recall from parliament follows a resolution passed recently by the party's National Council to expel Kupe for rejecting Chamisa's leadership.
We are following a resolution that was made by the National Council, which is a decision-making body in between Congresses that gives instructions to the implementing organ, which is the standing committee. So that is what we did.
Ms. Kupe says she actually sent a letter to Parliament earlier than the MDC led by Chamisa. So now she says it appears as if she's being victimized here by Parliament. Is that true?
It is so unfortunate. If she sent that letter, she sent it as an individual. The letter that was sent recalling her was sent by the MDCT party led by Advocate Nelson Chamisa implementing the National Council resolution.
So briefly, what is the resolution?
The resolution was she has left our party. She's no longer a member of the MDC, so she must be recalled from Parliament. And over and above that, even if as MDC we had not recalled her, the Zimbabwe Constitution says any member of Parliament who then resigns from the party that brought her to Parliament, she has no right or he has no right to remain a member of Parliament. They have to be recalled because they are no longer members of that party.
She claims that she's actually the genuine MDC. So can you actually tell us about this genuineness? What is this all about?
A genuine MDC follows the MDC Constitution. So we are referring it to the MDC Constitution, and if she's that genuine, she must follow the Constitution and its dictates so that it's implemented to suit her complaints.
So now it seems as if she has taken this matter with the lawyers, and she says you are yet to see a lot of fighting over this issue. Are you going to counter whatever the lawyers may send you?
We have no reason to counter her, because as far as we're concerned as the party, she was our member. We expelled her. She disrespected our Constitution, violated our Constitution left, right, and center, and because a lot of mayhem. So if she has a right, it's within a constitutional right to go to the courts and try and defend whatever she wants to defend, because she's going there as an individual because she's no longer a member of our party.
Is there any leadership dispute in the MDCT right now?
There's none whatsoever. None. The National Council of the MDC, led by President Advocate Nelson Chamisa, made a resolution as soon as our icon, Dr. Richard Morgan Tsvangirai, passed on, to say Chamisa is going to be our presidential candidate. They appointed him as the president of the MDCT. So for now, we have no crisis whatsoever.
That was acting MDCT spokesperson Tabitha Kumalo speaking with Gabe Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, April 13th. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. Sierra Leone's All People's Congress APC party has filed a petition with the country's Supreme Court challenging the election of retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio of the Sierra Leone People's Party as president. The APC says Mada Bio's election was marred by voter irregularities and rigging. Meanwhile, Sylvia Blyden, a Sierra Leonean journalist and social commentator, has also filed a petition challenging President Mada Bio's election victory. She denies her petition is part of a campaign by the APC. For analysis, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Andrew Koroma, an independent journalist in the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown.
Three of the executives from APC, that's Dr. Samora Kamara, who was the presidential candidate, and Honorable Minkailu Mansare, the deputy chairman of APC, and Dr. Usman F. Yansane, the national secretary general, all three of them are plaintiffs in the Supreme Court case filed against three defendants. That is NEC, the president of Sierra Leone now, or President Bio, and the National Election Commissioner, Infa Ali. All three are defendants, similar to the former case that was filed by the individuals at that time in a high court. The petitioning against the runoff election that elected President Julius Mada Bio. And this is coming up now in the media, and everybody is talking about it.
So how are Sierra Leoneans reacting to this development, particularly when they had to vote twice before the Electoral Commission declaring who had won in what most people described as a legitimately credible and transparent presidential runoff?
People are not taking it seriously, except the legal-minded people, but the general public that went into the election, those that I've talked to on both sides of the party, don't see this as a relevant issue. However, in litigation, you accept people at freedom to file in when they are not satisfied with an election.
Some people said if the judiciary, which they believe has demonstrated some form of independence, decides to quash the outcome of the presidential runoff, then it could possibly plunge Sierra Leone into another round of chaos. What are you hearing from people about this?
No, there's not going to be another election. This election is over. The next election is 2023. This is not the first time that losers are taking the winners to court. It happened in 2012 when the now President Julius Maada Bio took APC to court, and that case was quashed off. This is the second case, so it is not actually a case that people are taking seriously. They will go to court, but we know African countries are not going to take this kind of case seriously, and especially this one is not going to be serious.
Andrew Koroma is an independent journalist in Sierra Leone. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital of Freetown. The head of a national NGO operating in South Sudan's Ye River State is calling for the immediate and unconditional release of 7-8 workers. A Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition spokesperson admits his group detained the 7 humanitarian workers about 2 weeks ago. Daniel Friday Martin has more from Ye Town.
Executive Director for South Sudan Health Association, Justice Lugala, says SPLA-IO forces abducted 3 drivers and 4 health workers in Kupera County's Wujipayam. He says the 7 were abducted while returning from a trip to deliver medical supplies to health centers serving thousands of vulnerable people in Kupera, Limuro, Wuji, and Koyoki. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel says his group is holding the 7 workers because it suspects at least 2 of them to be government security agents.
2 of them didn't have ID, so that becomes very tricky. And we realize they have the agenda of the national dialogue with them. Nothing is wrong with them, they are safe. What we are going to do, we have already finished the preliminary investigation. I'm very sure of it. The 5 who are completely innocent will be released and their vehicles will be given and they will have to go back. At the moment, the 2, the order has to come from our commander-in-chief because these are people already considered to be security agents and they're going to be under prisoners of war. They're not going to be released. We have a strong evidence showing that these people are government agents.
Lugala strongly denies the 2 are spies, saying the 2-8 workers traveled to the area after receiving security clearance from both the government and the armed opposition.
The allegation is based on the fact that some 2 of them did not have IDs. Yes, that might be a mistake on our side because one driver left his ID in one of the vehicles. One driver was newly employed and his ID was being processed. And on the basis of that, the IO concluded that these 2 who do not have the IDs are therefore government spies. But we told them that is not true.
South Sudan in Focus made several attempts to reach government SPLA military spokesman Brigadier Lul Rai Kong for comments on the story. Our calls were not answered. Lugala is urging the SPLA IO to release unconditionally all 7-8 workers. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin reporting from Ye Town.
Uganda has finalized plans to manufacture cars within the next 4 years. The country's Minister of Science and Technology says the government has approved over 143 billion Uganda shillings, or about $30 million, to finance the project. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
Minister Tumwesije says the funding was approved by the cabinet this week. He says the government has allocated 24 billion Uganda shillings to kickstart the project by July of this year.
We already allocated 100 acres. We already done environmental impact assessment, done feasibility studies, and we are set to go. We are giving ourselves 4 years from next financial year up to the year 21-22 to make sure we have our first vehicles rolling out on our streets.
The car assembling and manufacturing project will be done under private government partnership with the Kira Motor Corporation, a local automobile manufacturing company. In 2011, the company launched its first car that runs on rechargeable lithium batteries instead of petrol. Tumwesije says Uganda's rich mineral potential will enable the car manufacturing project to succeed.
You know very well we have been having iron ore in Muko and in various other places of the country. So we hope that this iron ore, it's about 260 million metric tons, that we can also develop it to be able to make bodies for the vehicles. Also, Uganda has lithium minerals. And, you know, solar and electric vehicles will use lithium iron batteries. And this can be got from graphite, lithium and cobalt deposits, which we have.
Kira Motors Chief Executive Paul Isaac Musasizi agrees with Minister Tumwesije. He says his company has been offering training scholarships for their team members to acquire skills in different car-producing countries.
One of the things we have been doing has been to take the few we could afford to take to plants with the manufacturers out there so that they could spend some time in the engineering divisions and on the assembly line and in the logistics spaces to really learn that entire value chain.
Musasi says they will start by assembling buses before starting on other types of vehicles on the market. He says the cars will be a hybrid blend of the conventional internal combustion engine so that they can either run on fuel or electric energy. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin in Australia, where it is day 9 at the 21st edition of the Commonwealth Games, where 5 more African athletes may have vanished from the Commonwealth Games, organizers said on Thursday, after 8 competitors from Cameroon were suspected of fleeing a day earlier. Gold Coast organizers confirmed that a total of 11 athletes, including those from Rwanda and Uganda, were thought to have gone missing, while they were also looking to verify the whereabouts of 2 squash players from Sierra Leone. Commonwealth Games Federation Chief Executive David Grivenberg said the organizers will continue to monitor the situation.
These athletes are guests here in Australia at this, at this time. They're still within their visas. They have the right to travel freely. But this is obviously a issue that Team Cameroon is monitoring very, very closely. And until it becomes, a real issue in terms of visas and so forth, we would obviously need to take that very seriously.
And from Ghana, President Nana Akufo-Addo has suspended the Deputy Minister for Youth and Sports, Pius Enem Hadizi, as well as the Acting Director General of the National Sports Authority, Robert Safo Mensah, over visa scandal. The suspension, which takes immediate effect, is in reaction to the visa scandal, which has rocked the country in the wake of the Commonwealth Games currently underway in Australia, where 60 Ghanaian officials were arrested for attempting to enter Australia under false pretenses to be sports journalists in the ongoing 21st Commonwealth Games. Charles Osai Asebe is a member of the Ghana Olympic Committee.
Now, what I know is that some federation heads have been fingered in this saga, and the GOC will take the appropriate action against them. Like I said, you would get the details of the investigations conducted by the GOC when the games are over.
One of those suspended, the acting director general of the National Sports Authority, Robert Safo Mensah, differs as to his involvement in the visa scandal. Away from the Commonwealth Games to football, the South African Football Association, SAFA, has commended their match officials who handled the CAF Confederations Cup playoffs first leg match between Plateau United of Nigeria and USM Alger of Algeria for refusing to be compromised to fix the game. SAFA says the 3 officials, center referee Victor Gomez and his assistants Johannes Mashihindi and Atelescosi Ndoguni, conducted themselves impeccably well by promptly reporting the attempt to bribe them to CAF for further actions. The center referee was purportedly offered $30,000 to fix the match that was played last Saturday in Nigeria. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The government of the Democratic Republic of Congo says it will not attend today's International Pledging Conference in Geneva for the humanitarian crisis in the DRC. Information Minister Lambert Mende has accused humanitarian agencies of exaggerating the number of refugees in the country. And that's it for this Friday, April 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.